Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 168 of CJ Evolution. Pat Fitzgibbons here, host and creator of the show. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, thank you for tuning in and spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. I sure do appreciate it. We keep growing because of you, the supporter. Thank you so much. Special thanks to all the brave men and women out there working in the criminal justice field. Keep doing the fantastic jobs you are doing. You have much support from everybody out there. You know, I talked about going for it in 2018 in a recent show. You really need to do that. If you're contemplating starting that business or writing that book, quit thinking about it and do it. If you're hoping things are going to change and that book is going to write itself, hope is not a strategy, folks. It is not a strategy. My next guest, Darren Birch, exemplifies this. He had a successful career in law enforcement, did a little bit of time in the military, and now wrote a very successful book that he's going to talk to you all about. So I hope you enjoy this great episode with the one, the only, Darren Birch. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my next guest on, Darren Birch. He is retired from the Phoenix Police Department with over 30 years of dedicated law enforcement service. He's also a military veteran, and he's also an author, a very successful author, and I'm glad he's here, and he's going to talk about his book and what he's doing out there. Darren, welcome, sir.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. Like I said, props to your 30-year career in law enforcement. I want to talk a little bit about that in a bit, and your service to the military. I really appreciate it. Most of the listeners, if not all the listeners, appreciate the military and, of course, law enforcement. So thank you so much.
Oh, right back at you, my friend.
Now, how did a retired cop come to write a book? Because I think it's great, and I think more cops need to do this, because I know a couple cops that are just, you know, they have all these great ideas for books, but they're hesitant to put that pen to paper.
Yeah, I'm like you. Every cop, in my opinion, has a book in them. In fact, every first responder, I think, has a book in them. I was probably the last person in the world that would ever think of writing a book. I can barely write my own name on a book. The saying "it takes a village" is so apropos to me writing a book. It absolutely took a village to edit my book. What should have taken 6 months took 6 years.
Wow.
But it all started at the end cap of my career. I was the silent witness sergeant here in the Valley of the Sun in Phoenix, Arizona, Maricopa County. And that is a Crime Stoppers program. And we call it silent witness out here. And I would have a lot of media opportunities. I was on a regular on a rock and roll morning show. And instead of telling the kind of stupid suspect story from the internet, I just didn't trust the internet enough to, you know, rely on that as being truth and gospel. So I kind of told dumb Darren stories, things where I found myself early in my career, you know, if we all kind of bumble along in our early years of career. And there, it became very popular segment. Mm-hmm. And I was also my team was also very successful in silent witness, where we were really making a lot of arrests. We increased the arrests here by 50% when we took over. So I kind of felt guilty with this unusual business model, where the more successful you are with arrests in a Crime Stoppers program, the more your nonprofit is spending that reward mechanism, mm-hmm. and paying those rewards. So we're not going broke, but I felt guilty leaving, having not done enough on the raising money. I was always mm-hmm. geared towards investigations. So when I was leaving the studio one day at the Rock and Roll Morning Show, I hate to use the word fan, but this gentleman came up to me and said, "Oh my gosh, you're, you know, the silent witness Sergeant Birch with your twisted but true tales." And that's what I kind of coined them. Mm-hmm. And it was a regular weekly series. And it was very twisted, dark, funny. I wanted to kind of gear it towards that Rock and Roll Morning demographic. And so he suggested, this individual, I wish I knew who his name was, give him credit, but he suggested I write a book. And it made a lot of sense to me, because I already had wrote down the outline of these really kind of horrific but hilarious stories. Mm-hmm. And what should, like I said, should have taken very short time, actually took a long time because it became a much bigger book.
Yeah.
And now 6 years later, I put it out. It's been out for 2 months. It's already top 1% on Amazon. It's a bestseller book. It has all 5-star reviews. I know, wow. As soon as I say that, I'm going to have a 3-star, but right now it's all 5-star reviews. Just well-received, past my wildest expectation. And 100% of my proceeds go to our Silent Witness program, Crabstoppers program.
That is awesome. Now, what have you always been interested in writing? What was the catalyst, Aaron? Because, I mean, a lot of authors I've talked to, I mean, they've always had that bug in them. And then, it was really, something like a catalyst or something like that that just got them to that next step.
Well, it's funny you say that because it's probably a little bit true. I never thought of myself as a novelist or a book writer, but I always loved the theater. I loved movies. I've written a few screenplays that could never go any further than my desk. So I did like writing, but for my own edification, just for my own enjoyment. So when the opportunity came here, I thought it'd be a very easy book because I've already, told the stories, but the book became much bigger because I've had some tragedy in my life, mm-hmm. and I end up talking about that. It became a very cathartic journey, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. And the book is very unique. I mean, what can you give us a little bit more about what? I mean, you gave some indication of what it's about, but any other things you can talk about the book, Twisted But True?
Absolutely. No, it's a really good question because it is a very unique book in the sense that what started off as a kind of standalone coffee table stories mm-hmm. actually became a bigger arc. So it starts off with a very tragic, compelling story something that happened to me as a juvenile that kind of sparked my desire to save lives. And I don't want to say too much more than that, but that chapter is called Twisted Steel. And that really solidified my need to save people, and I don't want to go much more than that. And then it goes into how I became a cop coming out of the military, and then it really follows my career. The next 29 chapters is just chronologically following my career with a lot of bumbling mm-hmm. steps, a lot of good steps. In the middle of the book is one of the shootouts I was in. I was thankfully able to survive a fatal shootout mm-hmm. With a bank robber. So that's somewhat a pinnacle or pivotal point in the book, maybe midway. Mm-hmm. And then it goes and follows my career into sex crimes and in homicide. And again, each chapter is very, I shouldn't say each chapter, most of the chapters are very dark, twisted, and funny. Mm-hmm. And they all end with a twist. And I kind of did that as a kind of like a hook for the radio show. So yeah. They call it in with a somewhat if not a twist, a thought, where yeah. maybe you shouldn't do this if you're sitting at home. But some of the chapters are kind of tell the tale, if you will. I have an accent from hell, a bad place for a cramp. Cheek fillet, a double driver and an abortion cop, sheer sheep slaughter, which is the cover of the book. It's which I 100% dedicate to my wife. She was the one that came up with the book cover, which I think has helped sell the book. And then it ends with my career in homicide, where I had a small involvement in a very high profile, at least as far as media profile, serial shooter case, where we had two suspects, murderers that were joined forces, and a very unusual tandem to have two killers join forces and shoot up the city. Horrific. Jeez. And I followed that course because I happened to stumble upon one of the first victims and was able to save them. And then the very final chapter, I don't want to give too much away as well, but that's very unusual court proceedings. In fact, I can say I've never known about a court proceeding that would end in such a way as mine had, quite wow. frankly. Wow. So, yeah, it's a very unique book, to your point.
Now, you talked about the book's success. We're so happy that you're having great success with the book. Were you surprised by the success of the book?
Yes and no. I was absolutely surprised by the overall success because it's actually sold in other states other than Arizona, which that did surprise me. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't surprised to the extent that it was very popular here because of that morning show. It was a very popular radio morning show, and I still do radio. I have a radio show here in the Valley on one of the fact, the flagship, if you will, of the radio stations out here in the Phoenix, Arizona, is statewide, called the KTAR. Mm-hmm. It's called 50 Info. I inherited when I was the silent witness sergeant, and when my successor took over, he didn't have time to include that and asked if I would continue that show, and the radio station wanted me to continue. So now, almost 4 years in retirement, I'm still the host of what's referred to as the 50 Info Show, and that has allowed me to also talk about the book. So I knew we had a somewhat of a following here locally, but never my wildest dreams did I think it would become a Amazon bestseller. Not in a million years. Yeah. Wow.
And for all those people out there, we talked a little bit about this off the air, Darren, and I know that there's cops out there and people in criminal justice that want to write a book. I mean, what advice would you give to aspiring novelists out there who, you know, just need to get started? They want to get started, but probably don't know how to get started. I mean, what advice would you give people out there? Because I know two people personally that want to write a book is that they just don't know how to do it. And there's so much information out there, but it really, really helps when they hear it from a successful, you know, author like you. And I've had other authors on too that, you know, and I've asked the same question.
Well, the first advice I would say is simply do it.
Yeah.
Simply do
it. Just do it.
Thank you. Exactly right. Put pen in hand, you know, back in the old days, or a typewriter, but or grab your computer and just put yourself an outline, like, you know, back in your high school days, even not even college days, but just, you know, set an outline of you know, how the story is going to begin, which, you know, with a cop, we all have that story. So it begins in the academy and then it ends with your retirement. So we, as a cop, you know, we already have that story outlined, really. And you just tell the different stories. Now, it's at that point, my second bit of advice would be don't expect it to even sell. Mm-hmm. Write it for yourself, write it for your family, write it for your loved ones. It's a absolute chronicle of your journey. And I think it's an important message for other ones to hear. And to that point, my mother-in-law read the book. She was one of the first ones to read the manuscript because I wanted someone very critical.
Oh yeah, that's important too. That's right. Important too.
And all mother-laws are very critical of their son-in-laws. So I gave it to her, and she just doted on it and said, "I feel like I know you more than I've ever knew you. You know, and now that I've read this book, I truly know what you've gone through." And so I think that's important: is to write that book not for, you know, become some, you know, Stephen King author, but just for yourself, your family. But what's nice now is that you can go to Amazon or some of these other venues where you could, you know, pay and be a self-published author. Yeah. I didn't go that route. I was fortunate with my radio show. I was able to connect with a publisher. But, you know, if you want to spend money, just be careful not to be taken. Cops were really good at giving advice about not being taken on the internet. But sometimes we don't follow our own
advice.
Yeah.
Well, and I like the advice you gave, and I've heard that before, you know, with other authors I've had on, where you need, if you're starting out, you need to give it to somebody who's going to tear it up. I mean, not you know, just be critical of it, not just tell you what you want to hear.
Oh, that's so true. When I first wrote the manuscript, now I wrote it probably 3 years ago and finished, and I handed it to somebody, and they handed it back pretty quickly. And said, "Yeah, it was good. That's code." Thank you for laughing. But that is code for it sucks.
Well, that's code for either that or it sucks, and they're not even taking it seriously, though.
Yeah, and if you have a good friend, that's not the one you want to hand it to. You want a very critical person of you that will be honest and blunt and tell you the truth. So that, absolutely, and that is probably the best advice, is get an editor. And it doesn't have to be a paid editor. It just has to be someone that can look at it, like you said, with a critical eye and look, because when you read it, you're going to see the same mistakes. As cops, we've all wrote a report that we're not very proud of, but when we wrote it, we were. Later, 2 years later, you go to court and you're testifying on this police report, and you look at it and say, "I can't believe I spelled bear, you know, B-E-A-R, whatever." She was bare naked. So those are the type of things that we need someone. Spell check isn't going to do that. You need someone with a critical eye. You're right.
And that is so cool. And you talked about the 50 Info Radio Show. I mean, tell us more about the new career in radio. I mean, radio's fun. I mean, I've dabbled in a little bit of it, but tell us about the new career.
You're right. It is absolutely fun. And first of all, I want to say thank you, Patrick, for having the podcast and putting officers on.
Oh, thank you.
Because it's truly a bridge to our community. And that's what I found when I was doing this. So when I was doing 50 Info as a sergeant, as a, if you will, Crime Stoppers sergeant, I would have a lot of police individuals. I'd have my friends who were working homicide, were working a particular homicide case that might have been in the news. Tell us a little bit about it, you know, obviously without going into things that could jeopardize, you know, the court case. But talk a little bit, you know, and that was interesting. And I think the public liked that. I also had people coming on that had issues with having been victimized. One of the saddest guests I ever had on the show were the community of parents of murdered children, who I absolutely can empathize and sympathize with, having lost my own child. Yeah. So I was able to kind of have those conversations, those deep conversations. And since retiring, I've kind of steered away a little bit from all being police topics to anything that has to do with community. And so I bring in some of these small mom and pop nonprofits that help the community in a very small but important way, that don't have the voice that maybe the 100 Club has or some of the big nonprofits. And those are all great. We love those nonprofits. They help. But some of those small mom and pops do a lot. So what I love about the radio show is I'm able to have a conversation and help spread the word.
Yeah.
Like you're doing.
Yeah. And it's so honorable that you're giving all the proceeds and they're donated directly to the nonprofit Crime Stoppers program. That is awesome. That is amazing.
Oh, thank you. But I tell you that knowing what I know about that organization, and anyone that's been in a Crime Stoppers organization knows truly how successful, even above and beyond that of police officers, because as police officers, you know, we know about the program. We know it's a tip management system. We know that it's anonymous. We know that it's fueled by reward driven. But when you're actually sitting there taking these calls, and the probably the percentage, the lion's share of the calls, the person on the other end doesn't even want to know about the reward mechanism. They don't even care about that. They want to do the right thing for the right reason. They're just afraid of retaliation, retribution from bad people. And we can all understand that as police officers, you know, we're the you know, protectors of these individuals that have every reason to be scared. And so to see how successful it was, and now at retired, we're kind of all cops. You know, once a cop, always a cop. I'm retired, but I still have that passion.
Sure.
And so now I'm able to help. And so it feels good. So I appreciate you giving me kudos, but I get more out of it than I'm giving.
Well, but you're a businessman too, Darren, and we all want to make money. But what more I think is honorable, because some people wouldn't do that. Some people wouldn't put the proceeds to a book, you know that, towards, you know, good things for the community. So that's what's cool about it.
Well, thank you. And yeah, you're absolutely right. 100% of my book sales goes to the Crime Stoppers program. Yeah. The publisher obviously gets their cut, and of course the bookstores get theirs. For me, it's my way of donating. You know, instead of just donating cash money, I got to donate, if you will, the whatever investment I do with the book. Because pretty much one bit of advice going back to what it takes to write a book is you really do have to market yourself. Unless you're a Dean Koontz or a Stephen King, you know, you're going to have to market the book yourself. And so, you know, there is a little bit of investment, but it's investment into my community. Sure. I love it.
Sure. Now, what are your favorite, around the book subject, what are some of your favorite books, Darren?
Oh my gosh. I actually like some of the classics. I'm one of those rare geeks that loved Moby Dick.
And
The reason that comes to mind is Moby Dick for me was two stories. It was the, you know, the Ahab and, you know, that inner struggle. Mm. And then the following chapter was that somewhat difficult to read, you know, by the numbers, how to be a whaler. The reason I kind of laugh about that is when I wrote my book, when I first wrote it, and I gave it to a reporter friend. I was embedded in that community, if you will, the reporters and so forth. And she was an editor. So I thought, who better to read my book, or manuscript, better said. So I handed it to her, and she said, which book did you want me to read? The How to Be a Cop book or the Fun, Fast, Twisted, Dark Tales? And it was a great point. And then she hit me home by, you know, insult and injury by saying, Darren, this was longer than War and Peace.
Well, that's good. You had a lot to say.
And that's the cathartic part of the journey. So when you ask me about what kind of advice I would give to an officer who's thinking about writing a book, is write that book for yourself first and put everything out there. And then when you go through it, you can realize that, as a buddy one time called me, I'm kind of like Hydra. You know, I have all these multiple heads coming out, and you got to find that one topic. But it was a fun journey, and it was nice having someone give me that kind of brutal feedback. Yeah,
that is awesome. Now, I always ask, you know, successful people like yourself, I said, I always find out that most successful people have certain morning routines. Do you have a morning routine that you do and kind of to get you ready for the day?
Yeah, I'm unusual in a lot of ways. On top of just having this black cloud that has seemed to follow me, when you read the book, you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. But I'm also narcoleptic. Before I even my head hits the bed, I'm already in dream state. Wow. And I go right in REM sleep, to my wife's detriment, because she'll be like right in the middle of a conversation, and now I'm talking gibberish to her because I'm dreaming. But I only sleep about 5 hours, so I wake up because I'm in solid REM sleep.
Sure,
wake up, you know, if I go, I put her to bed, you know, rub her feet, get her bed. I'm retired, so I feel that I, you know, that's my duty, get her asleep. And then when I wake up, probably 3 a.m, after being in bed about 10, I'll get the house ready. And I'm just always on the go.
Yeah.
I do have a routine, like you said. I don't want to bore people with the listening audience with it, but yeah, I definitely have a routine. The weird thing about us, professionals and law enforcement, is that we're very driven. If you're in a profession anything longer than 4 years, and you probably attested this, you're driven and you care about the community. And so I get right on. I hated social media when I was, when I was a cop. I hated dealing with social media, other than using it to solve crimes. It's
a
beautiful, beautiful blessing to solve crimes. But now as an author, the first thing I do is, man, I go right into social media and I'm just plugging away on ways to really get the message out there. Yeah. Social media is, you know, there's a great benefit and deficit, but it's one of the things I do jump into in my morning routine.
Now I got to ask you the obvious question I'm thinking, Darren. So you were a cop for 30 years. You said you struggled with narcolepsy. I mean, how did you work graveyards at one point or another? I mean, how did you stay awake?
Well, you know, what's funny about narcolepsy, a lot of people will, and you know this as being a police officer, how many times do people relate police work what they saw on TV?
Oh,
when we go to trial, we have to tell people, you know, the first thing the prosecutor does is say the CSI statement. You know, what you see on TV isn't real. Mm-hmm. And with narcolepsy, I don't really find myself falling asleep during the day or anything like that. It's not like that. It's more unusual in the sense that I fall asleep instantly. I don't have to work to fall asleep.
Okay, so it's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. But the only story I have about that, as far as narcolepsy, that might be a cliche, it might be in my second book, because it's not in this book, is I was, again, driven. So I did some acting on the side. I was, you know how firemen always have like five different things they do?
Of course.
Yeah. And so I was acting on the side. I've been in a couple of movies. I owned a video store back in the day when you had the mom and pop video store. So I owned a video store, and then I was a cop. And I was juggling these three things. And I felt pretty good because, again, I don't need a lot of sleep. But at one point, I was in a film here local in the Valley. They're filming, you know, off-site here in the Valley. And I went 3 days straight without sleeping. And this was before I got used to it in homicide and sex crimes. You kind of have to, unfortunately, get used to that sort of ritual. But in patrol, I wasn't used to it. At one point, I literally fell asleep driving my patrol car. Yeah. And thankfully, there was a patrol officer. We were going on a call together. And he was able to, you know, hit that siren and wake me up. But that was a very scary, scary feeling. I mean, it's funny visually, you know, this cop. But like, as you well know, you know, the true effects of that could have been catastrophic. Yeah.
I'm going to change gears a little bit. You were a cop. You still have your finger in it a little bit. 30-year career, honorable career. I mean, you've seen some of the issues, Darren, and some of the struggles that law enforcement around the country have been and will continue to face. What do you think some of the challenges are for law enforcement in the future?
Perception, and it will always be perception. Mm-hmm. You know, now that transparency, which is a absolute 100% good thing.
I agree.
But with everyone having the camera and wanting to catch cops in that oops moment, understanding the perception of the job, as I kind of alluded to about the CSI effect that we have to deal with in trial, how many times in a movie have you seen, you know, the bad guy and the good guy pointing guns at each other and having this dialogue, this long dialogue? And as cops were thinking, okay, the second the one gun was pointed at the other person, there would have been a shot going off. There's no conversation. Or when you see the bad guy or the good guy running and somebody shoots him and he's thrown backwards. You know, if you're running, you're going to continue running forward. Yeah. You know, so the perception, I say these things because I want people, the public, to understand that when you see a video and you see the officer shoot and all you're seeing is the beginning of that video and the end of the video, what you're not seeing is the peripheral vision of that officer. What you don't understand is what that officer has been taught in terms of fields of fire and shoot and don't shoot scenarios. What you're not seeing is the 20 minutes that led up to that incident. So there's so much that is being judged. And I think that's going to be our biggest challenge. It clearly it already is. And the solution of that is truly community-based policing. I know I'm preaching to the choir when I say, you know, the more partnerships, good, solid partnership with we have in the community, taking people on ride-along so they can see what real police work is.
I agree.
Individuals who are committed to, you know, Black Lives Matter, I hate to throw that out, but people in Black Lives Matter taking these ride-alongs and understanding so that when they are talking about police brutality, because there's no one that hates police brutality more than a cop, and for us to be able to have these true difficult conversations about issues that really matter because we're all in this together.
I had, I think I told you off the air, David, I had Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman on the show a couple days ago, and he said something that was just poignant what he said to me during the show. But one thing that really stuck out is that he said there hasn't been a movie about cops that has been made in several years that doesn't depict a cop in a bad light in some way or another.
Exactly. And right now that's sadly the arc we're going, and we're seeing the trends. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that make it seem worse than it is, I believe, because back in the 30s, it was horrible to be a cop because they're shooting each other. And then in the late 60s, early 70s, it was very difficult to be a cop with the Black Panthers and some of the other. But we're back to that kind of negativity when it comes to even good people. I've had good people talk about, you know, their perception of police, and it wasn't in a favorable light. And Hollywood isn't doing us any favors kind of adding to that. So the more we as police officers be our own stewards into the community and talk about what it is we do and why we do it. And I don't think there's any better example of that as a ride along, literally letting it see what, and that camera is an extension of that.
Yeah. That and Citizens Academies. Those are a great way to connect, because I know we've had them in the past where you get citizens and, you know, coming to the academy. I know many out there, you know, listening know what I'm talking about, but you get citizens coming to the academy, you put a cap on it, 30 people, and they really learn what police officers do.
And put the people in the media, and this is not being thrown down the media because I'm part of the media to an extent with the radio show, but people that kind of are the voice of the public to see it firsthand, so that when they come on the air and we have these talking people, you know, talking heads that kind of, you know, give their take on something, they can do it in an intelligent manner. Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with you.
Yes. Well, Darren Birch, how can people find you? I'm sure you're all over social media. How can they find your book, sir?
Oh, thank you so much for that and this opportunity. It's Twisted But True. The title of the book is also the website, twistedbuttrue.com. You can reach me there. You can reach me there as well at Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, at twistedbuttrue.com. The book is available at any bookstore. You can order it truly anywhere. If you go to twistedbuttrue.com, you can get my book at Amazon, where there's a platform. And again, 100% of my proceeds go to that Crime Stoppers program here local in the Valley.
Well, Darren Birch, thank you, sir, so much for your career in law enforcement, your career with the military. We wish you nothing but success in the future. I'd like to bring you back on again sometime in the future, and just keep what you're doing, man. You are killing it, and thank you so much for what you're doing out there.
Oh, right back at you anytime, my friend. Thank you.
Take care, Darren.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.